Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, when the Cuban Missile Crisis erupted, there was a woman who had seen it coming for some time, but her work had been ignored until one day when her boss at the NSA arrived with two officials from the Kennedy administration wanting to know everything she knew about Cuba. Her name was Juanita Moody. The author David Woolman has been writing about her, and he joins us now on News Talk. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon.
Prior to 1961, say, was Cuba regarded as a high priority by the NSA, or it was just like a sleepy little island that they didn't have to worry about so much?
Well, I think once Castro came to power, it wasn't exactly a sleepy little island, but it certainly wasn't the kind of priority that the Soviet Union and its satellites and then also China were at the time for NSA. And then, of course, all of that changed after the botched invasion at the Bay of Pigs, and suddenly Castro's decision to sort of get in bed with the Soviets. And that, of course, led to the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Soviets' decision to secretly park some nuclear weapons 90 miles from Florida. So that certainly caught Washington's attention, yes, to put it way too mildly.
So in 1961, when Louis Tordella, the deputy director at the NSA, went into Juanita Moody's office and said, essentially, tell us everything you know about Cuba, they had already had some indication that something was happening there.
That's right. This is one of the most incredible things about this story for me, and really this history in general, is just how much we did know that the Soviet military was turning Cuba into kind of a home away from home. And few people understood that buildup better than this woman, Juanita Moody, working at NSA, tracking over a period of months all of the so-called signals intelligence, indicating that the Soviets were sending tanks and weapons and personnel and radar equipment and even rocket specialists to Cuba. And she really knew something was up. Now, I don't want to mislead listeners into thinking that she called it. You know, she knew that there were nuclear weapons there, because really no one did. This is one of the greatest intelligence failures in the history of the United States. But she knew things were heating up, as she put it. And really, I think no one was closer. And so she was trying to sound the alarm within the intelligence community, that really to anyone who would listen, you know, I know something is happening there. Look at everything. Look at all the lying they're doing about cargo ships arriving into Havana. And yet, what's also so amazing about this history is no one at the time really had the imagination to go to that next step, which is nuclear weapons. Today, it kind of feels like, well, okay, what would be the most extreme thing they could have done? But back then, it was so beyond comprehension or imagination that the Soviets would do something so provocative or so aggressive as to put nuclear weapons right here in the Caribbean.
Now, the thing was that as soon as she was asked, she reeled off a list of things, and much to the amazement of the officials who went in to ask her, what was the normal procedure in terms of the intelligence that she was gathering, David? Who would she send it on to, and why didn't they do something with it?
Well, this is why she's such a wonderful character and personality, really, because she bucked convention in this world, by the way, which is completely run by men in olive-colored uniforms. And here was this woman who wasn't in the military, hadn't graduated from college, and she knew more than they knew. And when Kennedy's cabinet members came in to ask her, you know, tell us everything you know about Cuba, she started reeling off this list of data, of information, and they even cut her off and said, come now, you know, in a incredibly condescending way, I think. You know, don't tell us what you feel, or don't give us your hunches. You know, we want just the information. And she said, look, you know, I don't have to have hunches. It's all here. It's all in the data that we've been gathering. And the convention at the time, really, there's sort of this pecking order when it comes to the intelligence agencies. And the CIA was sort of the top dog, run by the big brains, usually Ivy Leaguers. They're producing intelligence for the White House and for the Pentagon. The NSA at the time is really more like just a machine. They're just supposed to gather information and pass it on to the brains at CIA, who will then turn it into intelligence. And Juanita Moody really broke with that convention and said, look, you know, we know a lot. I'm going to put it together in a report and I'm going to circulate it around town, which at the time, of course, that did not mean like to the press or anything. That meant to the White House and the Pentagon and so forth, all of NSA's so-called customers. And she didn't care that that was really not how things were done at the time. Her boss, incidentally, was really on the straight and narrow. And he was said, no, 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 we can't do that. It's against protocol. I think he's sort of watching out for his career reputation. And she said at some point, look, you know, we're going to get a lot more trouble for not having distributed this than we are for having done so. And what she meant was this is urgent. This is as serious as it gets. Mm. And of course, history has proved her right.
Yeah. And did they get in any trouble when they finally decided to publish, as it was called in the intelligence community?
You know, the record on this story, by the way, I mean, is really hard to dig up. She's something of a phantom. But from what we know, she only was praised for the multiple times that she broke with convention, circulated material. This report actually came back with the president's initials scribbled on it, which, you know, in the we can't know absolutely that he read it. I wish we could, you know, if Kennedy had put it in some kind of journal or something. But for the conventions of the day, that was an indication that the president had seen and read it. You know, likewise, Adlai Stevenson, at the time, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., who, of course, is presenting those now famous images to the U.N. about the missiles in Cuba. You know, he also commended Juanita Moody for her performance during this period. She called him in the middle of the night at his hotel room in Manhattan. And again, the same situation. She got some State Department official who said, no, 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 I'm not going to patch you through to him. That's not how things are done. And I don't know what her exact words were, but she probably said something, you know, a little cheeky, a little snarky, like, you know, look, you little punk, I'm going to call him anyway, so you might as well patch me through. They didn't. So she did. She called the hotel. She woke him up in the middle of the night and told him the latest update about Soviet vessels moving across the Atlantic toward Kennedy's blockade in the Caribbean.
Mm, and I suppose that was a crucial piece of information in the sense that she'd seen an indication that at least one ship had turned away from the quarantine. So that was good news in terms of World War III.
It was essential. You know, this was these were some of the most tense days in the history of humanity. And it's kind of chilling even to say that, because I wonder kind of quietly, am I being hyperbolic? But it really wasn't, or it really isn't hyperbole to say something like that. And so when... So Kennedy establishes this line in the sea, basically giving the Soviets a chance to back out of this corner with sort of while still saving face. And we don't know. No, nobody knows what's going to happen with all those different vessels headed toward Cuba. And it is important at this point to throw in, you know, Juanita is not watching all of this happen alone, right? These are massive operations and tons of people, and it's probably Navy equipment that first picks up those signals about that first Soviet vessel that stopped in the Atlantic. But she's really the conduit. And so a lot of this signals intelligence is arriving at Juanita's desk. And then she has to distill it and get it on to the appropriate people. And it does look like, you know, that very first indication that the Soviets were going to back down or at least stop their approach to the embargo line, the quarantine line, as they were calling it. Yeah. It looks like that first indication came to her, which is really exciting, you know, and I imagine her. You know, she's gone 3-5 nights now without sleep, just completely stressed out. And then seeing that moment for everybody, it must have been so hopeful in that instance. But of course, they don't know if it's over yet, right? Just one ship pausing doesn't necessarily mean sure. That the Cuban Missile Crisis is over and we can all go home and have a beer.
Yes. What's so astonishing about this is the system persisted in the sense of allowing information to move so desperately slowly when you would have thought speed was a priority at that point. Though Juanita did start using electrograms. What was that?
Well, you know, through the course of her almost 30-year career, she just has her foot on the accelerator pedal for NSA in terms of what she saw as a sense of urgency for getting the NSA to be more tech savvy. You know, she entered the agency at a time when things are being scribbled with a pencil, and then a courier is taking a decoded message from the Nazis or the Japanese, and then running through Washington to take it to some other intelligence agency or to the Pentagon. And so she is pushing really through the advent of the computer age. There is you know, almost this parallel evolution between the advent of computing technology and faster and more efficient systems and NSA's evolution, right? And now, of course, we know like it's capabilities that we can't even imagine. A lot of that is because of this woman just pressing NSA all the time. She was actually back and forth to IBM a lot, for example. We don't know all of the details about this, but every time they sort of had a new toy or a new advancement in communication technology, she was there and she was saying, "Oh, you know what? We want that. We want that. And also, can you make this? Because I need to move these messages faster to the White House," for example. And so, again, you know, from her career, which began during the Second World War and ended in the mid-70s, she is always there pushing the agency to be faster and more efficient, faster and more efficient.
Towards the end of her career, did she have some sort of peripheral involvement in Watergate?
No, but I know what you're asking.
Yeah.
So she didn't have any peripheral involvement in Watergate, but this is, for me, this is why Juanita's story in some ways is tragic, because from my read on things, she was really thrown under the bus. And what I mean by that is in the mid 1970s, the American public really is introduced to the National Security Agency for the first time, and it is not a good first date, because there is this wiretapping scandal. It turns out that the NSA, really at the behest of CIA, FBI, Secret Service, has been surveilling a lot of American citizens, you know, civil rights activists, Black Panthers, Vietnam War protesters, all these people that Hoover and others had, I'm sorry, J. Edgar Hoover and others had wanted to be spied on. And, you know, in a civil democracy, that's not really a thing you're supposed to do. So there was, you know, a maelstrom about this, and there were congressional hearings. And so they called on NSA to come testify, and the top brass at NSA decided to send Juanita Moody to answer questions on Capitol Hill. And you know, this is not what she had signed up for, but in my view, at least, like a real team member and a patriot, at the risk of sounding sappy, she said, "Okay, I'll go do it." And so her name then began to appear in the press, in these articles associated with the wiretapping scandal. And it has a connection to Watergate, because Watergate sort of the scandal sort of spilled out of Watergate. But she wasn't involved in any of that business. You know, she was doing the work of NSA, gathering the material as she was supposed to be gathering material. But she was not saying, "Hey, you know, let's spy on this civil rights activist." You know, that's so far removed from her every day. You know, she was worried about nuclear weapons in Cuba, for
Yeah.
instance. So she really, in my view, again, I really feel like she got thrown under the bus. Her retirement comes only months after that whole thing unfolded, which, you know, you could say a 30-year career was a long run, and she just felt like retiring. Her husband was quite ill at the time, but you can also see that as, you know, quite a coincidence that she was like, "You know, this, I'm done here now," and I don't want to project too much of an emotional reaction on her, because we don't have it in the historical record, or at least I haven't found it. But that timing is pretty uncanny to me. And again, it sort of makes the act three of the Juanita story something of a tragedy. You know, this woman was a real patriot, and I think deserves a lot more attention than she has gotten to date.
I tell you, David, I'm looking forward to the movie because it's a fantastic
You and me
story.
both. You and me both.
David Wallman is an author and contributing editor at Outside. David, thanks a million.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Moncrief on News Talk.